Welcome to the Food and Climate Justice Podcast. And on today's episode, I'll be speaking to Agnes Tatey, who I met back in August in Edinburgh at Lauriston Farm. I'm really excited to be talking to you today and learning a bit more about what it is that you do.
Hi, Husina. I'm very happy to be here. I am the founder of Wakifi & Co., which is a small market garden enterprise based at Lauriston Farm in Edinburgh. We specialise in growing crops that cater to the culinary needs of the diverse communities of the city. And we offer a wide variety of produce that is of cultural significance to various minority groups. These include growing crops from East and West Africa, South and East Asia, and a bit from parts of the Middle East. We grow along organic and regenerative agricultural principles. So the project is situated within an existing agroecology farm. And within this wider context, we grow following practices that are chemical-free and designed to support soil health and microbiology and increase soil fertility and improve biodiversity. What this means for our customers is that they're buying veg that not only tastes great and is highly nutritious, but that is also good for the environment and for nature.
That sounds incredible. I know that living in a place like the UK, we are a real melting pot when it comes down to different kinds of communities that reside here. Mm-hmm. So it makes me want to know how long Wakifi & Co. has been going for and what inspired it.
So it's been going for only 2 years, is the second year of growing. And what inspired me to do it was a synthesis of two key areas of interest of mine. I have a background in social anthropology with a special interest in heritage and historic environment research. And part of that work involved assessing and determining questions of value and significance as related to material artifacts and places and landscapes. But I was quite aware that for many minority communities in the UK, their heritage often lies and is expressed through intangible aspects of their culture and traditions. And among other ways, these traditions often center around food. And this is usually around the preparation and consumption of it. But I was interested in how focusing the conversation on questions of production can help connect people to the physical and practical aspects of growing and therefore to their local landscapes. And my second and related interest was a concern for the environment, for the loss of biodiversity, particularly in relation to plant diversity and heritage, and for food justice. In many debates we have about climate change and sustainability, we often neglect minority voices, either from the point of view of how we can provide healthy and affordable food to people who often lack access, or from the perspective of the role they can play in meeting our climate challenges. So my project was a response to this. It was a realization that this could be a way to change things in a small but impactful way. It plugs the gap for supplying organic and culturally significant crops, while also enabling people to connect to the land, to their own traditions of growing, to their local community, and to do so in a way that helps build resilience, both, you know, with regard to their own and their family's health, but also that of their community and their environment.
You've touched on so many different important things through your studies and your research in anthropology about culturally appropriate food and how that connects to people's identity, the need for it, but also in my time of working within the climate sector, just how much the work that is being done in this sector, it's not done on a level playing field. In, as you've said, that minority voices often aren't the ones that are at the forefront, yet they're massively affected by climate change. And food is such an important part of our lives, particularly when you are diaspora. And connecting to your history, connecting to your heritage, one of the easiest ways to do it is when you have access to your own kind of cuisine. Food is connected to memory, I think. Food is connected to, you know, different sensations. It's It's really vital and important for us in terms of our identities. It would be great to learn a bit more about why you felt this was really important.
So I think my project and others like it are important for very many reasons that I don't know, we can't all touch on all of them. But I think primarily, first and foremost, in order to create a just and sustainable food system, we need more small growers like Wakifia and co. who are supplying locally, particularly in urban areas. A significant portion of vegetables that are eaten by many minority communities come from distant places. Many of these crops are not only of cultural significance to these communities, but they've also become quite integral to a national diet and to national imagination. It's therefore important that we continue to try and find ways to reduce food miles. At Wakifia, our vegetables are harvested on the same day that we sell them and they're supplied locally within Edinburgh. It's important to us to have these short supply chains that allow us to deliver produce that is fresh and of high quality, but also that enables us to connect really in a meaningful way with our customers who we see as partners and who have a stake in the process. The project is also important from a biodiversity and heritage point of view. As you said, you know, food is quite integral to our memory, our sense of who we are. And I see the two things, biodiversity and heritage, as sides of the same coin. And in conserving one, you're ultimately conserving the other. At Wakifia, we pay a special interest in the types of seeds we grow, and we use open pollinated and heritage seed varieties. So open pollination is just a general term that refers to the natural way that seeds breed and exchange characteristics and information over their life cycles. And open pollinated seeds carry a lot of genetic diversity that contribute to the biodiversity within our crops. They're also responsive and adaptable to the environment and local conditions. But for minority communities in particular, these seeds are especially important because they've been preserved and saved across many generations and often carry a community's history. Seeds tell amazing stories about who we are. For instance, this growing season, I'll be growing Kalaloo, which is a local name for broad-leafed green amaranth variety. And amaranth is this amazing grain and leafy vegetable that can be found in various situations across Asia and South America and across the African continent. Kalaloo amaranth is a West African variety that made its way to the Caribbean by way of the transatlantic slave trade. And my Kalaloo comes from a Jamaican friend and is part of a collection that came with the Windrush generation that's been growing in London for decades. And I'm also growing another crop that tells an amazing story, and it's the shark fin gourd, also called the Malabar gourd. And my seeds came from a collection grown by the Granton Community Growers, who are based in North Edinburgh. And they got their seeds from a local Bangladeshi grower. And the gourd has been growing there for many years and is now like really specially adapted to the North Edinburgh climate and is affectionately referred to locally as the Great Granton Gourd.
That's so great to hear that there's all these seeds coming from different places, but also how much is accessible to those communities and how maybe other communities are able to access food that's appropriate to somebody else's culture and enjoy that or learn more about how you diversify your cuisine. I think something that you touched on that is very potent is just how far our food is coming these days. And I think particularly in the UK post-Brexit, our food seems, if you're reading the labels, it's coming from further afield, which is a massive problem and a massive contribution to climate change. So it's amazing to hear how these very micro actions are being able to serve loads of different people. And I'd love to know, how is it going? How has it been? Is the crop responding really well to the climate that we live in the UK, what's been really successful? And also, it'd be great to know what your challenges have been.
So I really, one of my key focus in terms of the crops is to grow things that will adapt to the Scottish climate. And my context where the site is quite exposed. So it's asking a lot of the veg because it's it overlooks the further forth and it can be quite a windy site. But it's incredible the variety of crops that are adaptable. The first year, in terms of how it's going, the first year was actually a lot smoother and easier in many respects than this one. But many of the challenges I faced this year had to do with environmental factors that affected farmers and community growers across the board. In the first year, I managed to do quite a lot with very little infrastructure and capital costs. But the difficulties that arose this season would have required some infrastructure investment, for instance, in the form of caterpillar tunnels and other crop protection and season extension systems to mitigate the challenges. And I lacked the resources at that very crucial propagation and growing season, which significantly limited what I could grow and how much of it I could produce. I think this question of funding really is one of the biggest challenges and barriers that is faced by small growing projects. The scale is too small to benefit from any government farming grants or schemes which seem structured with industrial scale projects in mind. And this is part of a much bigger conversation that also includes wider issues about land access that would really require policy change on a national scale.
Yeah, this is something I tend to hear a lot about, and it's something that I'm having lots of conversations via the Just Fact programme with partners that we work with around land ownership and changes in policy. And while that's still a conversation and there's a real drive for that, what would you say are your hopes and plans for the future with Wikifia and Co, without, you know, ignoring that land access would be a massive help as well as funding? Is there ways of continuing doing what you're doing at a larger scale at the moment without those things?
In terms of like scaling up, I think where I am at the moment, I think there's a lot that I can still do. There's much you can do even within a relatively small growing space, but there are things that can also help me be more productive within the limitations that I have. So I'll be investing in a caterpillar tunnel, which will really help me grow things longer and provide protection against the specific conditions that I'm exposed to. And it means that I'll be able to supply more veg. What I really hope for is for more people to come and engage with the land and connect with their food and their traditions. And I really hope to engage more people in food production through farm visits and workshops and other knowledge sharing opportunities that will help us, I think, all really find a connection with our food system.
It would be great to know how you operate on a day-to-day basis. What does your work tend to look like? What is a typical day for Agnes?
Typical day. I don't know that there's a typical day, but also it changes seasonally. So right now, my typical day is a lot of prep for winter. So I am doing a lot of composting. There are certain crops that will survive over winter, so like chards and kales, and it's protecting them from frost, so covering them. And I am also planting crops that are going to overwinter, like broad beans and garlic and onions. Yeah, that's my day-to-day. And then catching up on like other admin aspects of growing.
Oh, that exciting
So thinking,
part.
Yeah, planning ahead, thinking, what am I going to grow next season? Do I have enough seeds? And planning my planting chart and calendar, Yeah, that kind of thing.
So it's a real mix. And I guess you mentioned something about wanting more people to be involved in food production and getting engaged with working from the land. How do you get people engaged with Wakifia and Co?
So at the moment, I think the first point is that people are often quite surprised in a good way about what they can find and what can grow here. That's the sort of the first point of engagement. And then what I'm hoping to do more of next year is to open up this space for visitors like you, you know, such as yourself when you came. That was great. And more opportunities for people to share their stories. Because I find once people get on the land, I've had across the year, the people who visited all share these sort of great stories of their memories of either growing themselves or their parents and grandparents. So I'm hoping to sort of do that more, but in a kind of structured way in the form of workshops, veg storytelling opportunities. So yeah, more of that.
Can you describe to me the setting and the environment that Wakifia and Co exists on? Because it's a really vast space. It's not in the centre of Edinburgh, is it?
No, but it is within the city limits. And it's very rare to have an urban farm of the scale that we do. So mine is a small enterprise within a larger existing agroecological farm, which is 100 acres. And that is quite, I think it is certainly the largest urban farm in Scotland. I'm not sure about the rest of the UK. The site itself is sort of, it's in the north of Edinburgh and it overlooks the Firth of Forth. And across that is the Great Kingdom of Fife. It's an area of great beauty and interest, both in terms of its long history as agricultural land, but also of ecological interest, particularly in more recent years, where there's been a more concerted efforts to grow in ways that are nature friendly and that encourage biodiversity, both in terms of our crops, but in the species. Because of our proximity to the Firth of Forth, we've got quite interesting bird life and important Scottish wading birds. And it's important that we're growing in a way that enhances that nature and doesn't deplete it, because often farming is quite harmful to the environment. Many ways, conventional ways of farming, always very good for the environment.
It sounds like you're very conscious about how you farm. It'd be great to know, do you think that the space that you operate out of is accessible to the communities that you'd like to engage with?
Yes, this is a unique thing. Because I am within the city limits and most minority communities actually live within some walking distance of the farm. So it's quite an interesting place because it's bounded by different neighbourhoods of different demographics. But a significant portion of minority communities in Edinburgh live in this part. And so it's great that I'm there and that the farm is within reach of them. It's about me, however, getting to them, getting that out and getting them to know that this is a space that is welcoming and is open to them. Because often minority communities may not always feel welcome in natural landscapes or other historic landscapes.
These spaces are so integral and important to people's identities because they resemble and reflect their own histories. Farming is very integral to our heritage. So coming and moving to spaces that don't have access to that because of land ownership, that's a much bigger, wider conversation to be had. But communities need these spaces and need culturally appropriate food. I'd love to know how people can support Wakifia and Co. or find out more. What's the best way to get in touch?
The best way to come find me is to come visit the farm.
Thanks so much for your time, Agnes.